Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday morning, the first Monday morning of the playoffs. It's happening. Joining me from Austin, Texas, is the professor, Kirk Goldsberry. What's going on, Kirk?
Not much. Just recovering from that first great weekend of playoff basketball, Brian.
For sure. Joining me from Oakland, California, but I believe he's flying down here to Phoenix, where I am right now. I was at the Suns Pelicans game one on Sunday night, is Anscapes Mark J. Spears. What's up, Spears?
Go Tigers. I saw him do that Longhorn thing. Go Tigers.
That's right. Some SEC action pretty soon here. I don't get really excited about games too much. I don't react too much. It's part of the nature of the business. It sort of roots it out of you. And you hear also the phrase, I was on the edge of my seat. People say that. Well, I was on the edge of my seat at the end of that that first Celtics-Nets game. And when that play happened, I didn't even know if it was a good basket for Jason Tatum. I had goosebumps, guys, goosebumps. And I just at the intensity of the moment, I didn't even know how it played out initially. Spears, it was one of the great ends to the season, to a game, for a game one. I've never seen a first round game one have that kind of intensity. It left me with a lot of questions, but I think the number one question was this for me. I don't know about for you. I can't believe this is a first round matchup, and it's a first round matchup for so many different reasons that were way beyond the end, the way the game ended.
Yeah. I was actually listening to it on the radio.
Wow.
Old school. It was going to Nuggets practice, and there was Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell. And after the basket, Cedric Maxwell yelled out, "Grandma's going to make you a sweet potato pie." I don't know what that meant. Right. But I was like, nope. You know, I guess that's going to be with the bird steals the pass. And, you know, grandma makes a sweet potato pie. That's going to be in there lower now. I miss going to Boston games, man. You know, I got to cover them closely for 2 years. And for those people who haven't been there, that's one of the greatest places to see games. But to answer your question, I know I'm dancing around. This might be the best parody that I could remember and since beginning to cover the NBA in 99, man. Like, they're really, and Brian, you saw it last night, like, Pelicans are pretty good. Like, that's an 8 seed. Like, the Suns had to work for that game. And usually, you know, teams get pounded. And, you know, I think the Hawks were a little tired. I think they'll fare a little better. But, man, this is going to be a fight to the finals on both conferences. Because of that parody, and it's like I was watching this series at Brooklyn Boston game, like, this could be an Eastern Finals, and they're playing in the first round, which is kind of sad, right? But hey, they got some great teams in other parts of the conference too, and that's why, you know, I heard that people say, well, Kyrie triumphed, and this is where, you know, where Kyrie's situation bit the Nets. Is that you have a first round matchup like this?
Thank you. That was where I was leading you. I wasn't going to say it for you, but that's where I was leading you. Because as mad as Kyrie is about the treatment of the fans, he like, I'm not going to defend the Boston fans. Trust me, I have been treated poorly by Boston fans. I mean, you? I've been treated well by Boston fans, but I have watched Boston fans obliterate players for years. I mean, every time I tell this story, every time you come up from the subway at what's the North Station stop right there, 365 days a year, every time I was ever there, they had shirts on sale that said F Kobe and F LeBron. Those were on sale in November. Were on sale in April.
Hey, don't forget the F Jeter t-shirts. They were always a mainstay there as well.
Right. Yeah. That was over at the Kendall at the Kendall stop on the red line. Well, yeah. Kirk, you have Boston roots too. You went to school there. So you know what the fans are like. but Kyrie has courted this treatment, and he has courted by his decision making. He has courted this matchup, like Spears just said.
Yeah, it was like watching an old school Ric Flair performance there for a while. He had the crowd just where he wanted them, and you know what? I love what Spears says. The parity is there in the NBA right now. This thing is wide open. But it reminds me also of 2015 when my beloved Spurs had to play the Clippers in that first round series, and these two teams had no business being in a first round series together. Probably two of the best teams in the West that year. These are the two hottest teams in the East right now. The Nets finally put it together at the end of the season. They came into the playoffs playing good defense, obviously playing great offense, and the Celtics were the only team better than them in the East, and they've been killing it since New Year's Day, as we all know. This did not feel like game one of round one. You add in all this intrigue about Kyrie being this ultimate villain in Boston, and that fan base being particularly sort of sensitive and ready to go with that exact kind of theme, a guy coming back to Boston and trying to do it. And man, Kyrie played one of the best games he's played in recent memory. That fourth quarter run, he scored 18 points in the fourth. The most points, Brian, that this dude's ever had in the fourth quarter in a playoff game. And he combined to score, I think, 23 or assist on 23 of the 29 Nets fourth quarter points. It wasn't until the very, very end when the Celtics kind of stole this game that the tables had turned on Kyrie. So it was an intense game, one of the most physical, most intense first round games I've ever seen. And I don't know if I can deal with six more of these guys. Jeez.
I hope there's six. And that's the thing. Like the many nuances of Kyrie were all there.
Yeah.
Because he was absolutely brilliant. His shot making and playmaking was just awesome. And so if you're a Nets fan, you're saying, oh, I am so glad he's on my team. It's all worth it. You know, this is a guy who's a difference making player in the playoffs. He's worth his weight in platinum in a playoff setting. And those things are partially true, but he's out there causing problems for his own team by the way he's interacting with the fans. And yeah, they shouldn't be saying the stuff that they're saying to him, but
that's Boston.
Of course that is. And he's inflaming it. He's stoking it. And, you know, I appreciate, in a vacuum, I understand his comments about how he doesn't deserve to be treated that way. No person deserves to have those things said to him, but he knows the lay of the land and he's putting gasoline on it. So I can't absolve him. He knows the cameras are on him nonstop. He knows he can't flick off somebody the back of his head like it's, you know, in grade school and it's not going to, nobody's going to see it. He knows he can't walk through the tunnel of an arena with 500 cell phones there and scream at a fan. Is it ridiculous that the fans, you know, was in Boston last year, Spears, right, where somebody threw a bottle at him?
And I think Tyler Johnson, like almost got hit by it and a security saw it or something. Yeah.
Absolutely unacceptable. Yeah. Absolutely unacceptable. Yeah, 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 completely bad statement on the fans, but he knows that that's who he's. So that's the other thing. And then the end.
You know what
the
thing is scary too, Brian, is it's like it just takes one stupid inflamed fan to make this like a horrible situation,
right?
And
I'm worried about it.
There's 20,000 people there. Most of them will just probably boo, talk a lot of stuff. But then there's just that one dummy, man. That's what makes me nervous about any situation like this. You know, the one guy that, all right, I'm going to take my savings and buy a ticket because I'm tired of this guy.
Well, something stupid, man. And you know Kyrie. Can you imagine, like, sitting down with Kyrie and going, hey, Kyrie, listen, man. I know this is very upsetting, but can you just tone it down for this series? Can you just block it out just for the good, for the good of you and the team? I think that would actually go against it. I think if someone of authority. Not that nobody has anybody has authority over Kyrie. I think if somebody had authority, like, you know, let's say Sean Marks or Joe Tsai, I think that would almost be counterproductive.
But hey, I'd be lying. See, and it may, and I think you guys agree with me because we're all from the same era. I love it. It's like what we grew up watching, man. Come on, Brian. Like, let's not be totally like PC. I love seeing these battles, man. Like,
I love it, but I don't like it.
That's what we grew up on. That's what we saw early in our careers. Man. The Kobe going there, like, you know,
I was Jordan on the edge of my seat.
Detroit, and like Bird used to go to LA, a Magic in Boston. Like, come on, man. Our this league has gotten so, you know, cookie cutter, nice and sweet, and hey, I'm gonna hug you after the game, dap you up, and let's go pop bottles.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
I like this.
Hey, you are exactly right. But I'm just saying, then
I just don't want
go
nothing
and,
bad
and,
to happen. But
right,
I,
of course.
I love this.
But I'm saying don't go then give interviews for all the fans to see where you stoke the fire. I mean, go do it on the court. But also, by the way, at the end of the game, Kirk, when Kyrie wouldn't give the ball up on the double team, you know, that was a hurtful moment. That was Kyrie doing, like, I would say he's doing too much with the fans. As great as he was, you got to give the ball up there. And the Celtics knew exactly what they were going to do. And look, there was a percentage chance that Kyrie was going to beat that double team. The guy's beaten 1,000 double teams, but the best and worst of Kyrie contributed to the way that game played out.
Yeah, and you know, you got to look back at that incredible sequence. Everybody's going to remember this game, guys, for the Tatum shot. And they should. That was incredible. I think it was the first buzzer beater in that storied franchise's home game history, which is kind of incredible. But, you know, it was 84-69. Boston was kicking their butt with 6 minutes left in the third. They opened the fourth with an 11-point lead, and then Kyrie goes to work. And that 11-point lead was a one-point deficit for Boston 4 minutes into the fourth. And it sure looked like, man, Boston was about to blow this game. And with 45 seconds left, I think one of the biggest shots of the game, obviously, is Kyrie hitting a step back in Marcus Smart's face from 28 feet. This is a guy a lot of people think is Defensive Player of the Year, and I'm not mad at them. But Kyrie, just to contextualize what happens after that, Brian, he hit that shot in a tie game with 45 seconds left against one of the best defenders on the planet to take a three-point lead. And he's so cool coming back down the other end. But you know, it's in that context that you look at the next trip down. You know, Jaylen Brown scores on an ATO, just powers by Bruce Brown and makes it a one-point game. This is the possession you're talking about. It's a one-point lead for Brooklyn. Kyrie, it's ISO all the way. He gets in trouble. Al Horford and Marcus double team around the right block, and it looks lost. And he finally gets the ball to Kevin with just a few seconds left on the shot clock. Kevin misses, and the rest is history. But maybe there was a better play for Kyrie in that last possession. Maybe he could have hit the eject button a little earlier in the possession. I think that's what you're saying. Get Kevin the ball earlier rather than with just 3 seconds left on the shot clock. Kevin ends up taking a real tough three himself in Jason Tatum's grill and doesn't make it. And then, as I said, the rest is history. And Kyrie finds himself at the wrong place at the wrong time on the other end as Tatum makes that layup as time expires. Just a wonderful last minute for the Celtics. And I just say this, Brian, that win was obviously massive for Boston, but if they hadn't won that game, it would have been devastating because they were the better team. Kevin did not play very well. And geez, they needed a last second home savior in that buzzer beater. If they had lost that game, it would have been brutal. And Brooklyn would be sitting here with a 1-0 lead, stealing that game on the road. So I think
I'm gonna add to that, Kirk. It's in the playoffs, man. You know, it's the first one to four wins. And so whether you win by 40 or you win by one, like when you lose a game like that, God, that stings, man. That stings because the advantage that the Nets would have got, home court would have been in their favor. I mean, I'm sure they know either way that they could beat them, but that just makes the task even harder, like when you lose a game like that. So I'm sure for Durant, who didn't have the greatest of games, Kyrie probably thinks back to some of those plays for Nash. Like that one probably, those losses in the playoffs sting more than getting their butt kicked, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, so Tuesday night is game two. This pod's coming out on Tuesday morning, so tonight. The Nets get one of these. See, the thing about the Nets is they have this back-end mystery of Simmons. There is increasing signs that Simmons is going to try to play. It's not my back. I don't see him in practice. I think it's wild that a guy would play for the first time ever for a team in the playoffs. But everybody's saying
has that happened?
I don't remember it happening where the guy has played for the first time. I'm sorry.
It could happen for a couple people this playoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, first time ever in a team's uniform, not just playing for the whole season, but the first time.
Debuting.
That's crazy. The one time LeBron's last year in Cleveland, the first time around, they remember they had Shaq on the team. Shaq got hurt, and then the Cavs traded for Antoine Jameson. And in game one of the playoffs, which just showed you how they were stitching that team together, game one of the playoffs, Shaq and Antoine Jameson played together for the first time. That was a big deal at the time because it was like, wow, how are they going to rush this together? But, you know, at least Shaq could play with those Cavs teammates. At least Jameson had played with those Cavs teammates to a certain degree. This guy, as far as I know, has never worn a Nets uniform, an actual game uniform, except for picture day. But that is out there.
Yeah.
And so if you're the Nets, you're thinking, just extend this series, just extend it. So they win game two on Wednesday, which absolutely they can. And I will say this, one of the things that I really was clear to me, it is very rare that a team's size bothers Kevin Durant. He is one of the guys I've said it's almost his shot. You almost can't defend his shot because of how tall he is and of how he puts the ball way over his head. Well, he got thrown off his game by the Celtics size. Also the officials in the game allowed physical play, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. You know, we're doing this on Monday morning, so we haven't heard what the Nets might say at practice on Monday and Tuesday before the game. But it wouldn't surprise me if I were, you know, the teams that I've covered, they would have a meeting and decide, hey, we're going to begin to apply pressure to the referees. If I'm Steve Nash, I'm coming out and saying, you can't let these guys manhandle our guy like this. It was unacceptable the way Kevin Durant was officiated. Like, this is what I would normally see in a playoff series is trying to affect the officiating, because one of the big things that happened in this game was Durant was unable to have freedom of movement. And that really bothered him. He played a poor game. At one point, Jason Tatum straight up blocked a shot head on, which I've almost never seen with Durant. So to me, Kirk, the takeaway from this game, other than the big moments that we may not see again, is the Celtics intend to be very rough with Durant, and they got the officiating to cooperate in game one. I don't know if it'll last.
Yeah, I think so. Somebody tried to game plan against Kevin in the playoffs for a few years. There's nothing you could do. And we had, in the Spurs era, we had Kawhi and Danny Green when they were both playing very, very high level on defense. And there's essentially, it's very difficult to do anything because he's so talented. And as you mentioned, his shot is so high off the ground and obviously very accurate. But I think this might be the single best defensive team that Kevin's had to play in the playoffs in the sense of the matchups, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart. This is one of the greatest fleets of perimeter defenders that Kevin Durant has ever faced in a playoff series. This is the best defense in the NBA, Brian. This is nothing that you're just going to roll over. And Jason Tatum, you know, he did play incredible defense. Go rewatch that last shot that if Kevin makes, we're having a very different conversation today. Jason is one of the few guys who has the instincts and the length to feel for where Kevin's trying to get and get there. And Kevin still got the shot off, but boy, that was a tough shot in a large part because Jason Tatum was right there with him. There's very few players that can get in Kevin's face and play that kind of defense. And beyond Jason, as I said, there's also Jaylen and Marcus Smart, heck of a second and third choice there for the Celtics. This is one of the best defenses he's ever played in the playoffs. And he's going to still get 40. There's going to be a game where he gets 40. I promise you that. I'm not saying they're going to stop Kevin Durant, but Kevin's going to have a hard time doing what he normally does against this Celtics defense in this series.
Hey, Brian, and I wanted to add this on, you're mentioning Ben Simmons, and I've heard the same things about games 3 and 4. I found it interesting in the box score, which is, it looked weird, but Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge both got DMPs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that shows kind of how, you know, small in a lot of ways that the Nets were going. So I'm really, like, intrigued by, like, how do you get Ben in now? Like, in what way? What is his role? I assume he comes off the bench, right? But, like, what do you want him to do? It's even as talented as he is and his ability to do all the things that he could do, like, has he even scrimmaged with them? Like, this is hard. This is hard. I mean, like, even the
I think it's crazy.
Yeah. Even as crazy. Much as Steph Curry has, you know, played with the Warriors, they felt more comfortable, and he felt more comfortable coming off the bench in game one against Denver. So just trying to, like, I've been watching Jamal Murray, and he seems like he's close. And Porter told me he thinks he's day to day, but just to incorporate somebody now when the margin of error is very, very slim, right? Because you can't experiment. You got to win these games. You got to advance. That, I think that's really hard to do. And good luck to the Nets coaching staff in figuring that out.
Particularly in the context of this exact series. That's all I want to say, Brian. This is not Sixers Hawks. This is a different animal entirely. And for the exact kind of struggles that we've seen Ben have, to put him into a game in Boston in game 5 or game 7 or something like that, that's intense, man. Like, there are real questions for me, not only on the role fit and his basketball legs and his health, but his ability to rise up immediately, as you're saying, Marcus, in this exact series and contribute.
Yeah, I mean, I think long-term, I've said this before, I think Ben Simmons is center. I'm not saying he plays center against Joel Embiid for 35 minutes, but just in this game, imagine having Simmons out there instead of Claxton and how it would have opened up some of the things they could have done. So, but yeah, short answer, we'll see. A lot more is going to happen in this series. I have a rule that I've developed over all the years I've covered the playoffs that you never overreact to game one. It takes discipline because there's so much excitement around series that it's, you know, and I have seen, I think there's two series that come to mind where I did see game one and I go, oh, I can see this clearly. This is what's going to happen. One was when the Pacers upset the Knicks, the last time the Knicks ever won a playoff series, and they had the higher seed against the Pacers, the Paul George Pacers, like 2012 or 13. I saw game one in the Garden and said, no, the Pacers are going to win this series. And the other one was when the Orlando Magic upset the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2009. I saw game one and said, I don't think the Cavs can defend this team, but never overreact to game one. So let's not.
Remember when Iverson and the Sixers
classic beat up
the
example.
Lakers in game one.
Classic example.
That is the seminal example, Marcus. Yeah.
3 times a week, the Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of the games. Plus, they have a community of friends, including Dominic Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. That's The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And on Wednesdays and Fridays, the podcasts are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Cutting the price of your wireless bill feels good, really good. Actually, it feels great. You should try it. So cut your bill by switching to Straight Talk Wireless, now offering our $45 Silver Unlimited plan. That's unlimited high-speed data and 5 gigabytes of hotspot for just $45 a month. Get nationwide 5G on America's largest, most dependable networks. So why pay a whole lot for your data when you can get unlimited for a whole lot less? The $45 Silver Unlimited plan from Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. At 60 gigabytes, we reserve the right to review your account for usage in violation of Straight Talk's terms and conditions. A month equals 30 days. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop.
All right, so think about, speaking of game one and not overreacting, Tuesday night we have game two in Memphis, Wolves, Grizzlies.
No, overreact.
Not overreacting.
Overreact. Just gonna... No, I'm changing it for you. I'm overreacting.
He's going to go for it.
It's not even an overreaction. I saw this was a problem before.
Boy, did I call this wrong. I thought Memphis would torch that. I know the matchups. I know the matchups don't... I know it. They favor the Wolves to a certain extent, but I couldn't believe how much it. I was dead wrong about how this series was going to look already.
You've been dead wrong on the Timberwolves for a while. I told you back on our old show, The Jump. I want to say in the spring, about a year and some change, and I love you like a brother, and I respect your basketball acumen. You've been around the game a long time. But I told you about these Timberwolves, Brian. I told you. I said they're going to be in the playoffs this year. You don't remember that. And you looked at me like I was crazy on national television.
I'd have said you were crazy 3 months ago.
And I tried to tell you.
Not even a year ago, I thought you were crazy.
Ant-Man is the truth.
Yes, he is.
He is the truth. He is like the... He's like, I know we're going crazy over a job, but I'm telling you, this kid Ant-Man is special. He is, man, I love watching him play. He's capable of dropping 30 on every given night. He's spectacular. And you got three guys that could give you 30 on every given night. And that's, to me, where I don't know if Memphis can handle, even with Ja, that firepower as a team. To me, this is a bad matchup. Mentally, it's like that Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other. You got two young teams fighting for the same thing. So Memphis is suddenly not the underdog. And now they got some real adversity. I'm wondering how they're going to handle this real adversity. And just as hungry as they are, so is Minnesota. They got the same chip on their shoulder. This is a horrible matchup for Memphis. I have not jumped on the bandwagon. I've been standing on the corner of Beale Street with some ribs and a beer, but I won't get on the bandwagon like everybody else. And I think I picked actually Memphis to win in seven. But my mind has been telling me to listen to me. And I wanted to take Minnesota in this series. And I believe Minnesota will end up winning. Respectfully, Ja Morant, who is amazing. But I just think this is
exactly what the Grizzlies need.
This is a good
disrespect.
I would have said this before
disrespect.
Game one. I'd have said this before game one. I'm telling you, man, Minnesota is a bad matchup for this Memphis club.
I agree. And I think, you know, the number that jumps off the page in game one is the 130 points that Minnesota put up on this team, the Memphis Grizzlies. They're known for two or three things. Obviously, Ja Morant, his incredible highlights, being so young and being so sort of edgy. But statistically, this is known as one of the best defenses in the NBA. And Anthony Edwards just went in there and put up 36, a very efficient 36. First playoff game, and look like the best player in the series in game one. That could change, but Memphis needs to do something to adjust for that. And they have great coaches. But you know what else is – when I think about this Minnesota team, I think it was Townsend Russell's team sort of last year at some point. And at some point in the last few months this year somewhere, this became Anthony Edwards and Pat Beverly's team. A very big personality transplant has occurred, and this team is now one of the edgiest, most dangerous young teams in the NBA. And that was on full display in game one, where they went in and said, we're going to take this game.
One of the reasons I have been skittish about the Wolves is because I was there before Spears. Several incarnations ago, I thought the Wolves, I said they were going to win 50 games, and they won like 33. I believed in them before and was repeatedly let down. And the thing about them, they are dangerous, I agree, because Anthony Edwards can go off for 45 points at a moment's notice. But they have very high variance players. Yeah, D'Angelo Russell can hit 8 out of 12 shots. He can also hit 3 out of 12. Yeah, Malik Beasley can come off the bench and just be a microwave type player. He can also come off the bench and give you empty minutes. Yeah, Patrick Beverley can be a pest. There are other times when the matchup is bad where he gets rolled on defense. Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns is a tremendously talented player. There are times when he fades into the wallpaper, especially on the defensive end. Now, if you are making the argument that that was the old Timberwolves, and that with Chris Finch and with an older, more confident Towns, and with Beverly injecting them with a different spirit, and with their collective, we're young and we're angry and we're going to show you, and we're going to give right back to Memphis, and we're going to beat our chest when we win a play-in game. That, like, if you want to push that back on me, that's a case. I just watched Memphis all year long.
Yeah.
Slice people's throats, just be absolute killers. And absolutely major credit to the Wolves for coming in and just punching them right in the face.
They look like the better team from jump.
I agree. I agree. And, I was at this Pelicans Suns game.
We didn't even hear Whoop That Trick. They didn't even get to play it.
I know. And the Pelicans just had like their best week in years. Like, they were all hyped up, ready to go. The Suns hadn't played in a week, And the Suns came out and were like, yeah, I just want to remind you that we're the best, like right out from the start. They just kicked him right in the gut. And, you know, that is an example of a team that's, you know, handles their business a little bit better maybe than Memphis. But they've done that more than Memphis has. So I'm going to credit that. And like, look, guys, we talk again in 10 days. You could shove this back in my face, right. But I still am a believer that the Grizzlies are going to handle them. But I don't think that's what it looks like to me.
You know, the X factor is the pesk of all pests. Patrick Beverley. Can he be a nuisance to Ja? I saw it a little bit. And I'm like, Ja, don't bite. Don't bite, Ja. Don't bite. And I can see him start drawing back at him a little bit. The way to shut him up is to destroy him. Like, I remember Luka
doing
that.
Which Ja can. With all due respect to Pat Bev, I've spent some time with Bev.
No, of course he can.
I love Bev.
Of course he can.
Ja can destroy
him. But that's what he has to do. Like, game two has to be a Ja game. He has to destroy him, show them who they are. Because once you destroy him, it kind of changes. Maybe he's still going to be Pat, but Ja has to impose his will next game. But I'm telling you, these, and another thing that we don't talk about, because we never talk about Minnesota, is their length. Their length defensively. Like, they just got, they have positionless players. Like, they got all this, like, bothersome length everywhere. I'm telling you, Brian.
They were the seventh seed for a reason, Spears. They were the seventh seed because there were times they looked great and times when they looked awful.
We might have to go get some wild rice soup and some walleye fish. Watching who they play, Golden State, maybe, right?
Well, I mean, you're saying you think the Wolves are good. The Wolves are going to be the one playing Golden State.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a far flight from you. Where you're at, too. That's quicker flight for you. Man. I'm not disclosing the bat cave in which you live. But I'm just saying that.
Well,
I just,
Spears,
these guys made it. They're the future.
Yeah. Listen, I made that flight a lot of times and went up there and listened to Tibbs and listened to,
new
you
day.
Know. Okay.
Tibbs didn't have Ant-Man. I'm telling you, this kid is.
No, I get.
He's the next one. I'm telling you. Get ready to see those number one jerseys everywhere. The same way Ja is amazing. They're going to be praising this kid like this after these playoffs.
No, man. Look, I love the swagger that he plays with. It is great for the game. It is great for a place like Minnesota. I love the way he plays. I love the way he talks about the game. He's great, you know, and you know, they got ripped for taking him over LaMelo, you know. They were trying to trade out of that pick. Gerson Rosas was trying to trade out of that pick up until draft night. He was trying to make a deal with Golden State to get his pick back. It's like really remarkably worked out. But I'll tell you what, Kirk, Spears and I mean, hopefully all the travel works out, but Spears and I are supposed to hang out here in Phoenix. I feel like this is going to be a topic of conversation later on. but I mean, I don't want to take a hard position against Minnesota. It's more of a position of me believing in Memphis, just to be clear.
Yeah. And you have a lot of reason. They gave us a lot of reason to believe in them, but they need to demonstrate those reasons here in game two. If Minnesota comes out and does what they did again, especially offensively, if Ant-Man, Marcus's favorite player in the NBA, comes out and puts up another game like he did in game one. Now we're going back to Minnesota. Now we have a problem. You know, if there's a team that's facing a must win in game two, and I am with you on the overreaction lessons, can't overreact to game one. That said, game two is a big, big game for the Memphis Grizzlies. If they go down 0-2, go to Minnesota. That fan base hasn't had a moment like that in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
This
party
could
like
get...
It's 1999.
well said, and it's true in many ways. But yeah, I think this game too is the defense for the Memphis Grizzlies, their signature thing all year has to do better, especially on Anthony Edwards. And somebody else besides Ja Morant's got to show up for Memphis on the other side, whether it's Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bane. Dylan Brooks actually played pretty well. Steven Adams, somebody, Brandon Clark.
Steven Adams gave him nothing.
Somebody's got to give him something in game two aside from Ja Morant. Because even if Ja goes for 40, how are they going to get to 120? That's a big question. So I think the biggest, you know, if somebody has a must-win here in game two of any team, it's the Memphis Grizzlies.
Well, I will say this. Bontemps went to Minnesota to cover James Harden's first game as a Sixer. And the night before, the Grizzlies were in town. So he went to the Grizzlies-Wolves game, whenever that was, mid to late February. And he came out of that game and he goes, you know what? So it's not just you, Spears. He's like, you know what? That's not a great matchup. And he said that to me last week, and I still was, you know, hard believing that the Grizzlies were going to handle this series. Before we go, I just have to say a word here about Chris Paul.
Hmm.
I know that this is the series I'm covering, so it's what I'm immersed in right now, and I'm not expecting this to be a series we discuss much. The challenges for the Suns are ahead. Chris Paul had a 19-point fourth quarter. It was late on Sunday. It was the last first game
incredible
one.
Performance.
What was so amazing about it is all the terminology that the Pelicans use is pretty much the same as what the Suns use, because Willie Green was an assistant and he brought a lot of it over to New Orleans. And so Chris Paul, Larry Nance Jr. was playing really well. He had led a comeback, and Chris came into the game and he heard the coverage. I mean, he would have figured it out anyway, really quick, but he heard the coverage code that Willie Green yelled out, and he knew what it was. And he just absolutely took apart the Pelicans defense for about 5 minutes, scored 17 points in 5 minutes. I don't think Chris Paul can play better than he is right now. His late game play this year was as efficient and devastating as any player I've ever seen, in so much as that he always delivered. This is a man who shot 58% and had a 12-1 assist to turnover. I'm going to say that one more time. 58% and a 12-1 assist to turnover ratio in clutch time this season. And this game wasn't even clutch time. It was a 6-point game with like 11 minutes to go, but he ended the game there.
Yep.
And Spears, Chris Paul can't take a game like LeBron can. He can't take a game like Durant can. He can't even really, you know, there's certain even things even compared to Tatum, because just his size, basketball is a game of size, but he has never played better, Spears. I don't see how he can play better. And his focus is on a razor's edge. And I think we're going to see, if he can stay healthy, a special 2 months here from Chris Paul. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but he served notice again in this one.
You remind me of that old man in the park. Pick up ball back in the day, man. Just not the tallest, not the fastest, not the most athletic, but his basketball IQ is spectacular. And he just makes the game. He looks so easy. He slows it down. And that was fun to watch.
Yeah.
That was fun. I mean, I've appreciated his whole career. And, you know, he's had so many, like, what-if moments because of injuries during his entire career. And he even had remember he missed a week because of COVID last season, and he was hurt during the finals. So there's so many things you could talk about. He's due for that moment, right? He seems due for that moment. He has a team that's now they've been to the finals. They got an MVP candidate who should have been an MVP candidate on their team. And they know each other now. This is certainly a much more dangerous team than before. And I've often wondered, like, if Chris got that championship moment, what would that be like for him and his family? I remember last year when he made it to the finals, and you know his brother CJ is like his right-hand guy. Chris got an extra finals hat. And before they got on the plane back to Phoenix, went to the Ritz-Carlton in L.A. and sought his brother out so he could give him the finals hat too, so he could be a part of it. there's another hat he wants to give his brother, right? And it ain't gonna be easy, but if he could stay healthy, I can only envision like what mentality he would have back in the championship level.
Yeah, you know, not only that, but he was pouring salt. He was doing his classic Chris Paul pouring salt. He was barking at Willie Green, who he really likes, but he was letting him know, don't put that defensive assignment out there on me, sir. And then in the classic moment, Jose Alvarado, who's one of the best stories of the NBA right now, they put Alvarado on him. It got to the point where they just were trying everything, or maybe it was a switch, but he took Alvarado down, made a jumper over him, like about an 8-footer. And then he said, too small to Jose Alvarado. Chris Paul saying too small to the rookie. Hey man, you may be doing great and everything's going good, but don't you forget, this is my court. Yeah. You are too
great
small.
Story. It's cute.
Yeah, the Pelicans could use Lonzo Ball or Jrue Holiday in that stretch last night. I can tell you that, because they wanted to make that game interesting in that
stretch. Well, they had Herb Jones, and they just, Chris Paul was like, no, if you're going to defend me this way, I'm going to make sure I got Larry Nance on me, and I'm going to do it 8 times in a row, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to kill you.
It was an absolute clinic. It was like watching Tom Brady or something run the 2-minute drill, just hitting everything, reading everything, executing everything. And the dude has played point guard for 40,000 minutes now. He is a grandmaster, man. This guy decodes and defeats every defensive coverage. And yesterday, yeah, right, when the Pelicans wanted to make that game interesting, Chris had different ideas. He's like, nah, let's get this, let's end this game. And he went out and won it. 30-10-7 yesterday. Pretty good.
All right, Spears, get on that airplane, get down here to Phoenix. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you guys later this week.
Ant-Man. Remember that.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.